A Beautiful Woman by Cheap Yellow Mustard. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. Our call-in number is 800-893-9562. You can listen to us live or download our show and any past show by Googling in Qumran Report. Now, this week on the Qumran Report, we will talk with some of the cast members from the upcoming performance of If the Shoe Fits, Voices from Solitary Confinement, which is being performed at the Vortex tomorrow, June 3rd, 2014, at 7 o'clock p.m. The Vortex is located near the corner of Olympic and Santa Fe, 2143 East Olympic Boulevard. Now, I'm delighted to have us with us in the studio, some of the cast members from If the Shoe Fits. I'd like to start off over here, and can you tell us your name, the role that you play in If the Shoe Fits?
My name is Lee Shaw, and I play the character Sitiwajama.
My name is Lee Beck, and I play several different characters, kind of the spokesperson for the prisoners who went on the hunger strike, and Jack Morris, and Mr. Bibbs, and Todd Asker, and I think that's about all the ones I play.
Shaheed.
What's going on? My name is Shaheed Chappelle, and I play Reader 2, and my character's name actually is Sean Swain.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the characters you play. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Earlene Anthony, I play the narrator, Marie Levin, and Georgiana Williams.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Look, before we get into some of our monologues, and we have Bobby Buck sitting over there with us today, too. He's going to be in this conversation also.
He's always here.
Bobby! I just woke up.
Yeah, we just woke up.
Let's start over here. What are your thoughts on the whole concept of solitary confinement in the prison system? Let's start with Lee.
It's nothing but torture. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be able to be in a place where you can't see nothing but a concrete wall in front of you, right? Mm-hmm. You have no interaction with other people. That's nothing but torture.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other way to explain it, you know? And all these people that are in solitary confinement, I often wonder if they ever get out. And not having any interaction with other human beings, and something go wrong on the outside, who are the state gonna blame it on? Most likely them,
mm-hmm.
But they should be blaming themselves because they create the monster of their own self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are social beings, we are human beings, and we are social people. To cut that off is like putting a pit bull in a cage and not even letting him out. Mm-hmm. And when you do let him out, he gonna bite somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly more than none, he gonna bite somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Do you blame that on you for locking him up, not letting him roam free, or you blame it on him?
Mm-hmm. You know? Okay, Lee.
Well, strikes me as extreme deprivation. Of course, I mean, if you're in a one room by yourself with nothing much else around you for 22 hours a day. And then when you are allowed to come out, you're in a room smaller than this radio studio, or not in a room, but in a gated area or an outside area where you can't really see anybody and you can't really, there's just no human contact. And I just can't imagine how, I mean, it must be a really terrible experience to try to live through. And some of this testimony is mm-hmm. shocking, and the means that people use to try to survive it.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, is a testimony to the human spirit. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of them go crazy. A lot of these people just become completely mad because there's so much deprivation and no human contact. They're not allowed to see their families. They're not allowed to communicate with other people. And that sounds very, very much like torture to me.
Mm-hmm. Bobby, what are your thoughts on it?
I really couldn't really imagine it myself, but I just staying inside my apartment for over 24 hours, and I got the opportunity to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, and y'all know I don't like sitting still.
Yeah, but look at your decoration.
Yeah, but but just being in jail before, just know you can't leave. I just never been in no solitary confinement, but just to know that you can't even open the window to get fresh air, I don't know. This mm-hmm. wouldn't be easy.
Wow. Terrible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about Shaheed?
Yeah. First of all, I want to say I'm grateful to be at Skid Row Radio and to be working on this production with this amazing cast of very talented people. And I think my thoughts on torture, being locked in solitary confinement, I definitely agree with Lee Beck. It's a spiritual thing. And it's to first break you down physically and mentally. And they want to eventually destroy your spirit. And I just think that torture is unequivocally unacceptable under any circumstances. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't matter what these people have committed, what type of crimes they've committed against society. They're still human beings, and mm-hmm. they deserve to be treated like human beings until they serve their consequences. But to torture someone, it's just unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And that's not how you resolve a situation that an individual has committed a crime or a heinous act against society. You don't repay evil with evil. You repay evil with good.
Okay. Earlene.
Wow. It's like, I really can't imagine being somewhere for, let's say, 20 or 30 years in one area. And it's like you're doing the same thing every day over and over and over and over again. And this piece that I read, he was in solitary confinement for like 41 years. Mm. So he must have gone in at a young age and then came out like he was 70-something. So that's a whole lifespan that he actually missed while being in solitary confinement.
And you're talking about somebody whose case was thrown out, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. After 40 years.
Found out he was innocent after all that time. But in between, we've come into the electronic age and many other things that's going on. And I'm sure when he came out, even though he was out for a short while, he was probably like a newborn babe. He probably saw some of these cell phones and iPods and some of these things, and he probably wouldn't know what to do with them. Yeah. So it's just, I can't imagine. And then their families, what they must go through. It's probably, I would kind of liken it to just saying that they're dead because they're like gone for all of this time. And you don't know if you're going to see them again or what. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's just like the person is dead.
And it's justified by believing that they are knowing that they some of them had done some terrible crimes, so it's justified by the kind of crimes by society. I mean, a lot of people are all for that.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm gonna ask him. But Lee wants to say something.
It was a guy years ago, and he spent 63 years. I think it was throughout like San Quentin and Folsom, and you know, after 63 years, they finally released him. But when he got out, he couldn't deal with the outside. Mm-hmm. So they had to take him back inside the prison at San Quentin, and he died. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the kind of thing that Ms. Arlene was talking about. Mm-hmm. How you going to function on the outside after being gone that long?
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask this then. What are your thoughts on, they're always talking about, this is the way that they handle the gang culture inside of the penal system. You just control so many by gangs. And this is the way they take the gang leaders. They have to isolate them because they're too dangerous in the mainstream society. What are your thoughts in relationship to the to that argument they use?
See, what they do, the person that they locked down in solitary confinement hasn't committed a crime in there, right? Mm-hmm. The only crime he's committed is being accused of being a gang leader, you know? But he has done nothing to that fact. Mm-hmm. you know. So now you take a person that ain't done nothing, mm-hmm. and you lock him away for 25, 28, 40 years or whatever the time it is in there. You know, I mean, what justice is in that? What kind of justice is that? Mm-hmm. If I go and stab somebody, then you got a right to lock me away. But if I step in that prison and you suspect that I'm a gang leader, I'm a member, and I can cause some kind of problem, but I haven't caused no problem, mm-hmm. that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Excuse me. Shahi Chappelle again. And I think that, again, it's this concept to me of, like, trying to bring reformation and change to a generation, and you're using the methods that these criminals are using, these wicked discrimination, hate. You're using these qualities to try to bring about change, and it's just not going to have a effect. Mm-hmm. And obviously, someone who's in a gang, they've probably had a lot of problems growing up in their background, different issues they're dealing with financially, socioeconomically. And I think this is, we have to find a more positive way for a positive reform and change. And to me, it's just all a spiritual thing because, again, you know, a lot of behavior is learned in environments that we grow up in. But changing starts with your heart and your mind, making a decision to say, you know what, I grew up in this neighborhood, but I'm not going to fall victim to these circumstances. I'm going to try to make a better decision. And me, myself, I'm from Compton. I'm from Compton, Los Angeles. And you wouldn't believe that, but I am. And I grew up around a lot of gangs, violence, gunshots around the corner, couldn't walk down the street, all that. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. as I internalized my environment, I said, you know what? Everybody's dying. Everybody is losing their lives at a young age. Mm-hmm. And I value my life. And I said, you know what? I want to make a different decision. So mm-hmm. it starts with making a different decision. And that's even for the people who are privatizing these jails and putting these so-called criminals and these gang members in jails, the policies and procedures and the standards that they're using for these criminals are
mm-hmm. okay.
They're just full of hate.
Mm-hmm. What struck me is that you know, they're worried about the gangs, and there were gangs, and gangs have been a big problem in prisons, you know, and the violence of the gangs and all that. But these fellas here, they unified all the gangs. Mm-hmm. They put out a decree and got everybody to stop the violence and the hostility mm-hmm. to fight to stop solitary confinement. And mm-hmm. To me, that's one of the most beautiful parts of this whole story is the way these prisoners, who are supposed to be such terrible gangs right. and so divided, mm-hmm. actually found solidarity with one another to fight this kind of torture that they were experiencing. Mm-hmm. That was pretty cool.
Beautiful. Let's do our first monologue, which opens up with the our first song. This is The Heat Inside of the Bus, and we're going to open up with that.
Inside the bus was as stifling as the tension which lingered in the surrounding atmosphere. As the bus roared angrily down Highway 101, the trance-inducing drone of the big diesel engine lulled me into reflections of my life, memories that had soared past me like the scenery flying by outside the barred-tinted windows of anonymous Grey Goose, and as swiftly as the life I had led thus far. The restless, dismal chimes of shackles and chains broke me away from the melancholy spell I had fallen under, and there followed the sudden realization that the world of oceans, mountains, and landscapes would all soon be but a memory of another lifetime. Looking around me, I found not to be alone in this realization, for the other prisoners there seemed to be entertaining similar thoughts, but no one dared to speak them.
Wow.
Powerful stuff.
Okay. Now, they were wow. on Hector Gallegos that wrote this beautiful piece, and they were on their way to Pelican Bay. And I'm going to ask Miss Early and Anthony to do that little short piece about Pelican Bay, and then we're going to talk about Pelican Bay for a while. Mm, okay. So our audience will know what Pelican Bay is.
Pelican Bay State Prison, PBSP, is a supermax prison in Crescent City, California. explicitly designed to keep California alleged worst of the worst prisoners in long-term solitary confinement. It takes its name from a shallow bay on the Pacific about 2 miles to the west. The prison lies in a detached section of Crescent City that's several miles north of the main urban area.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Now, Lee, the portion that you read about the heat on inside of the bus, what are your thoughts on that? It seemed to be that little trip heading up to Pelican Bay or something.
Well, it has to be a major moment in a man's life or a person's life when they're heading off to prison. And just that realization as he's going down there that he's going into this isolation, really. I don't know if this fellow was thinking of solitary confinement per se, but he was certainly heading for prison.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine but that nearly everybody that goes to prison has a similar experience like that, where it begins to dawn on you that this is going to be a long haul. When you go to prison, you don't go for 6 months or a month or two or a week or two, or it's not like being thrown in the drunk tank overnight. You know, it's a you're going for a year or two or maybe 10 or 12 or 15 or, five to life, mm-hmm. I have a nephew who's been in there for nearly 20 years.
Mm.
And, he was involved in a crime, but it was, there were a lot of circumstances that weren't accounted for in the crime. And he served his time, but he's not getting out. So he was sentenced to 5 to 17 years, and he's been in there 20 already.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And last time his parole went all the way to the governor's desk, and the governor refused to sign it.
Turn it down.
Everybody else was for it. And this was after many times before the parole board. So it's mm-hmm. really a difficult thing to get out once you get in.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this, Mayor, and Lee, I want to get your comments on this. When she was talking about Pelican Bay being designed, how did you say this?
Explicitly designed to keep California alleged worst of the worst prisoners in long-term solitary confinement.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that, just for creating a prison like Pelican Bay, which is on the edge of the California-Oregon border? I think it's a long ways from here.
14 hours away.
Mm-hmm.
One way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you think of somebody, see the mind, who could even think of such a thing? You know,
that part right there.
To keep you, not only to keep you locked up, but to keep you having family contact.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? What kind of person would do that?
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at that, you think about some of the things that I have experienced, hearing about. Some people have gotten tortured up in there to the point, not just to lock you away, but they've physically been harmed up in there. Like the guy, I think it's back in the 90s, who got scalded almost to death.
At Pelican Bay.
At Pelican Bay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of things that go on in them places that people don't know about. And the only people that can really tell you about it is those who are in there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? To get the truth of what's really happening. So going to a place like Pelican Bay, one would think that, what have I gotten myself? What am I going into? Because most people have been in prison. They've been in there for a few years or whatever it is. But Pelican Bay is the last stop, not only going up out of California, but the last as high as you can go. Because they got shoes at Tehachapi. They got shoes at Folsom, Corcoran, High Desert. But Pelican Bay is the last stop. That's where
the worst
wind up. When you say alleged, that's the court. Alleged. You alleging I did a crime, right? But I done a crime. So,
Okay. Look, let's play a monologue from Herman Wallace, and then we're going to discuss that for a minute and move right along.
I wonder why everybody think I'm a poet. I'm not a poet. And understand something. And it wasn't meant to be a poem. It was meant to be a statement. I was in a dungeon at the time when I wrote it. And I just decided to write something about myself and the things, the changes that I was going through and how I got where I am. Somebody said it was a poem. I said, you gotta be kidding me, it's a statement. Then when I got locked up for it and all of this, it just took off. They removed my whisper from general population to maximum security. I gained a voice. They removed my voice from maximum security to administrative segregation. My voice gave hope. They removed my voice from administrative segregation to solitary confinement. My voice became vibration for unity. They removed my voice from solitary confinement to the supermax of Camp Jail. And now they wish to destroy me. The louder my voice, the deeper they bury me. I said, the louder my voice, the deeper they bury me. Free all political prisoners, prisoners of war, prisoners of consciousness. Herman Wallace, Angle 3. The title of this poem is A Defiant Voice. If death is the realm of freedom, then through death I escape to freedom, which is a quote by Fran Fanon.
Herman Wallace was a courageous fighter for justice, a political prisoner who this system locked up in conditions of torture and solitary confinement for 41 years. On October 1st, 2013, Herman Wallace was finally freed after a federal judge ruled that his original indictment in the killing of a prison guard had been unconstitutional. 3 days later, on Friday morning, October 4th, 2013, Herman Wallace died of cancer in New Orleans. He was 71. This is the reality of isolation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what are your thoughts on Herman Wallace?
By the time I get to Herman Wallace, I'm just overwhelmed. I can't imagine he was in solitary confinement for 41 years, and he gets out of solitary confinement, and he's out 3 days, and then he dies.
Wow.
That's just, I just can't make any sense or comprehend that at all, even though he had cancer and died. It's just, to me, it's unbelievable.
He was released because his indictment was ruled unconstitutional by the judge.
Innocent, yeah. And then 3 days of freedom.
Yeah.
And he dies. That's just overwhelming for me.
Yeah, and let's keep in mind that he was in one of the toughest prisons in the United States,
mm-hmm.
The Angola prison down in Louisiana. And he was there mainly for being a Black Panther. It was three of them, the Panther Three. And a lot of people forget that there's still one more individual that's still doing time there. Being one of the Black Panther Three. But I tell you what, let's take us a quick break for our community calendar, and we're going to come back and do some more monologues and get into some more discussion.
This is the community calendar for upcoming events. Tuesday, which is tomorrow, June the 3rd, 2014, at 7 p.m. Drama Stage Qumran presents a performance of If the Shoe Fits. These are voices from solitary confinement, written by Andy Griggs and Melvin Ishmael Johnson. In this performance, you will hear the stories of those who have been held in state-sanctioned torture. This is a free event, free parking, refreshments will be served. The location of the event is the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard, Los Angeles. That's at the corner of Olympic and Santa Fe. We'll also have special guest speakers, followed by a Q&A. For more information on this event, please contact dramastage1@yahoo.com or 213-479-1764. All are welcome to attend. on Thursday, June the 5th, 2014, from 8 a.m. to 12 noon. If you're looking for a job, this is the place to be. The Los Angeles Mission present their 13th annual Moving Forward Career Fair Day. Come meet LA-based employers. Bring your resume and dress your best. Employers will be there. DPSS Wilshire Special District, DPSS Metro, Midnight Mission, Wine Guard, Union Rescue Mission, Volunteers of America, Chrysalis, Employment Development Department, and many more. The location is the LA Mission, 303 East 5th Street, Los Angeles. Contact information is Alvin Cervavolo, Director of Career Services, 213-629-1227, extension 517. On Saturday, June the 7th, from 1 to 3 p.m., Serve the Warriors, along with Pause and Joy, present EFT and Reiki section. All are welcome to attend, and these are free to the veterans, and I'm sure the veterans know what these sessions are. The location is Creative Empowerment Studio, 562 South San Vicente Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90048. You can contact Judy Decker at servethewarrior.org. Also, we believe this to be a very special event coming up. Thursday, June the 19th, in celebration of Juneteenth, Drumstage Qumran will do a stage reading of the 101 Club, written by Judith Bowman and Melvin Ishmael Johnson. The 101 Club recalled the Freeman Field Mutiny, a series of incidents at Freeman Army Airfield, a U.S. Army Air Force base near Syracuse, Indiana, in 1945, in which African Americans, member of the 447th Bombardment Group, attempted to exercise their rights as officers to use the base officer club. And the play dramatized the events that followed this uprising. The location is beautiful Ford Theater on the Edison Plaza, 2580 Cahuenga Boulevard, Los Angeles. If your organization wants to advertise in our booklet or display information on a table, or for more information, contact DramaStage1 at yahoo.com, 213-479-1764, or nomoretimetowrite at gmail.com, or 626-703-1230. And this is a free event, and all are welcome to attend. And this is also a Roby production. And if you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to DramaStage1 at yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. And the call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now back to our host.
Could I announce one event? Mm-hmm. Thursday night, Story File at Art Share at 8 o'clock. Music, poetry, and storytelling. I think you'll have a great time. Come on down.
Okay. Who's on the agenda?
A Public Works production.
Oh, and who are your guests?
Are we going to get it in again when we go around for the closing comments and contact information? Thank you, Ms. Earlene Anthony. We're back with the cast members from the play If the Shoe Fits, which is being performed tomorrow, Tuesday, June the 3rd. 2014 at 7 o'clock at the Vortex. Come check us out. Now let's do some more monologues. Next is Lee Shaw, and he's going to perform a piece, and then we'll come back and talk about it.
All I have is this pen, this paper, and the truth. I write to you as a survivor of torture, soon to experience more, in hopes that you will use my account here as you see fit, to shed a light on the use of torture in the United States. During one retaliatory stint in segregation, I learned of torture cell 182. I do not know the name of the man who was in that cell, the cell next to mine. His cell had no bedding. He had no toothbrush, no clothes, and no soap. The temperature was uncomfortably cold for me with all my clothing and wrapped in a blanket. So the victims of torture cell 182, in order to keep from experiencing hypothermia, had to pace 24 hours a day, all night, all day, for days. I came back to Mansfield Correction in 2009 and was placed on the gang list for my religious beliefs. I was not taken to segregation. Instead, I was taken to a row of cells hidden behind the medical clinic. The cell I was placed in had no bedding and no mattress, just like my neighbor long ago in torture cell 182. I had to pace 24 hours a day to stay warm. I couldn't sleep. I survived. Since September, two other of the state's victims have not. I do not know their names, but two prisoners have died on torture cell row since I was fortunate enough to be removed from there. Perhaps they died pacing the same cold cement floor that I paced, hour after hour, day after day, feeling 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. Their deaths were investigated by the same officials who tortured me. I now face the rest of my life in Supermax, locked in a concrete tomb, dying in complete isolation. I've been approved to be transferred to this torture facility by psychological professionals who affirm that I'm sane enough to be driven crazy.
Horrible. Wow.
Go ahead.
No. You know, I mean, it's like people playing games with your life. You know, you're already condemned, you know, just being in prison. And then they want to play games with you. And they use any and everything they possibly can to drive you mad. You know, I wonder if the guys in, what's that, Guantanamo Bay, experienced the same thing, if not worse. You know, because they're from a whole other area. You know, they tell you, say, I'm an American. You know, I make mistakes. Okay? You served your time and you paid your debt to society. But has society paid its debt to you? You know what I'm saying? You got people inside of prisons, right, that are there for the wrong reasons. I mean, people working there. Their whole idea is to make life miserable for you. You know? So, and they got these places, they got segregation, right? The hole or whatever you want to call it. But they got some other little special places that they take people, just like in Guantanamo Bay, so they can't see you, so they can do their thing on you. You know, and that's...
What about the concept of debriefing as the only way that gang members can get out of solitary confinement? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I put it like this right here. Would the associate warden snitch on the warden? Right? If he did, he probably would wind up without a job forever in his life, just like the guy did with Watergate, the security guard. Right? No more job for you. You out of this thing. You know, so now you want some guy to come in there and to snitch on somebody, just tell him anything to get somebody that's put in the same position that you are already in. It's a personal gain type thing. You know what I'm saying? For a blanket or a mattress or anything. You know, you're going to snitch on this person, betrayal, right, so that you can get out of the position. That's part of the reason why so many people stay so long.
And that's one of the five core demands that the hunger strikers laid out in terms of stopping the hunger strike.
Well, a lot of times, too, the snitches... reliability isn't very high. I mean, the person that turns evidence on you, maybe, you know, that they may be lying is a very big possibility. That
selling the scores.
Yeah, yeah, like so they can get to the easier way for themselves. So it's, you know, it doesn't hit the level of the California judicial system, you know, requirements for reliability in a criminal trial by any means.
And then I hope we get a chance to talk about two other aspects of solitary confinement, and that's women's in solitary confinement and also immigrants, immigrations, how that become a business model for these private prisoners.
Yes,
and it's big business.
It's all about the money. It's all about the Benjamins, they say. You know, it ain't got no, see, because they won't. Let me ask you a question. If we all in this room moved to Crescent City, we would become part of the population in Crescent City, right? And that means that when the money is being dished out, right, they going to get some money for us because we staying in Crescent City. Well, most people don't know it. But even though you're doing time, wherever that prison is at, you're accounted as part of the population. So if they got 10,000 people up there, you got 10,000 extra added people that's locked up, added to Crescent City's budget.
Mm-hmm.
So now Crescent City gets a little money out of you, but you ain't, you know.
Yeah, federal.
Yeah. And okay. See, most people don't realize that. That's why you catch these prisoners in some of these outlandish places, some way out places, mm-hmm. where most people, even the snakes, don't even want to live.
Yeah, save a lot of cities with building yeah. prisons in that area. Let's move to the next monologue. Shahid is going to do a powerful monologue for it. Tell us what it is, and then we'll talk about it after.
Okay, the name of this piece, it's a part of the production if the shoe fits, obviously, and it's called I Shall Not Die. I shall not die a thousand deaths of compromise, giving up names in exchange for food or blanket. I will bite my own arm to smother my screams and rob you of the satisfaction when you disassemble me. I shall not die shamefully, my chin against my chest, kneeling before the humiliating hole that I dug for myself, waiting upon the pistol shot. I will always refuse the blindfold. I shall not die abandoned and alone, obliterated from the memories of those whom I love. My faith never questioned. Someone will always stand in the rain outside your office window, my name on a cardboard sign. No matter how many times you cut my throat or hang me from my own bed sheet, bludgeon me with your nightstick, or fire your bullets into my brain, whether you encircle me and in South African Bantustan or a Coca-Cola factory in Bolivia or an alley behind the stone wall or a prison in the heart of it all, I shall not die. A million times, I shall not die. You will only get my corpse. My name is Sean Swain. All that I have is this pen, this paper, and the truth. Remember me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what are your thoughts behind that piece?
Ooh, wow. I think it's kind of hitting on the same thing I've been talking about this whole evening, is that we know that torture, solitary confinement, the objective of it is to destroy. It's not to heal. It's not to change. It's to gain profit, monopoly, and power. And when I embody this character, Sean Swain, I mean, I live in this generation where it's like, hey, we're on Facebook, we're Instagramming. It's like everything is instant gratification. I can't even imagine this guy getting to the point where he can utter the words, I shall not die. That means that he had nothing left. He was on the brink of death. But he said that you can have all these physical things, you can destroy me, you can dehumanize me, you can criticize me, you can enslave me, but I'll always be free because I shall not die within. You can't kill my spirit. You can only destroy my body. Mm-hmm. And I think it's such a profound place to come from. And I don't think everybody has that type of tolerance and resistance. Most people probably give in and they lay down and die. But yeah. I think it's the person who perseveres, who has a connection with this higher power, with God, who understands that there's more to this life than just physicalities. Mm-hmm. And that you can rob somebody of their physical body, you can cut them, hang them, beat them, you can smash their bones into pieces, but you can never capture someone's soul, someone's spirit.
Mm-hmm. Now, what message would you have for all of these little youngsters out here that are still caught up in gang banging and all like that in relationship to what's out there for them in prison? Bob, I want you to interject.
You know, I'm just going to keep it real because that's just who I am. But I come from a family that has a history of jail abuse, if that's even a phrase, but that's how a phrase is, just jail abuse. They've been abusing jail. My father, my mother, my older brother, they've all been locked up for years in and out of jail. And I think the message that I would give to these individuals, men and women, is that you have to be connected to your higher power. You have to be connected to your soul, because your environment, what you come out of, your background, who people think you are, how they label you in society, your socioeconomic status, how much money you have in your bank account, that doesn't matter. You will not be defined and should not be defined by those things, because it's more to life than just that.
Okay. Bobby, what do you think? What advice would you give these little youngsters that are still out here running around banging and haven't had a chance to experience this prison industrial complex yet?
But really, they all need to come check out this reading and kind of see, you know, I would love this reading. I would love for this reading to really be pushed further, like even to the schools, like mandatory for people to get more information about what these kids might be facing accidentally, not even as a purpose of their own. Just cause just a one step to the left, one step to the right can take you off way, you say 14 hours to get to a place.
Mm-hmm. Pelican
Bay. That just lets you know that, you know, the people can smile and market and make everything look good on TV, but they so, I don't know what you want to call it, just evil. Mm-hmm. Might as well say just evil to set up a facility like that, right, to where a person can be shipped off and never heard from again, mm-hmm, and experiment and just do all this. So the kids need to be, you know, exposed to this information, mm-hmm, right here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Lee, what kind of advice you would give these?
Well, I don't know. First, I was thinking when Shahid was doing his monologue about how the people we hear from in this play are the people who were articulate and who could speak up and who learned to speak up for themselves, or who always spoke up for themselves, no matter how bad things got, apparently. Because these guys, they were in solidarity confinement, and yet it brought out their deepest humanity in a certain way. But I wonder if others are as fortunate to have that kind of fortitude and solidarity inside themselves. And as far as advice for young people, you know, stay out of trouble. You know, try to find a way to get by without, you know, knocking people over and shooting people and getting yourself in trouble as much as you possibly can. Get into youth organizations. Be active. Mm-hmm. Be an athlete.
That's
be a
right.
student. Be a somebody artist. Who helps old people across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Love your mom and dad if you got them. And if you don't, you know, love other old people, because they're other people's mm-hmm. mom and dad. And, mm-hmm. you know, try to find that love in your heart. And, you know, and it's easy to get caught up in this violent atmosphere sometimes. And sometimes it takes you away faster than you can realize it will.
Yeah. Okay. Lee Shaw, what are your thoughts in terms of these little youngsters that you see heading down the wrong path, want to bang, but yet don't have any experience yet about the reality out there waiting on them?
Well, I'm going to step away from that and say it like right here. If I would tell young people, if you want to get your productive years taken away from you, and you know, between the ages of 18 and 30, you should be able to figure out what you're going to do. You should be on your way to do it, right? By age 40, you should be able to reach your goal, right? And you should be on your way to living comfortably in what you do. You know what I'm saying? Don't let the state of California, whatever it is, don't let them take your productive years away from you, because you'll never get them back. And you'll wind up spending the rest of your life in and out of jails and prisons. Mm-hmm. It's just a simple fact. You know, somebody told me that same thing in 1970. He wasn't talking to me, but I was listening. Mm-hmm. The same thing in 1979. He spent 20 years of his life, from 20 to 40, locked up in a federal prison. And he was telling another guy who was in federal prison, don't let them take your productive years away from you,
mm-hmm.
because you'll never get that back.
Now, how do we, what do we tell them? How do we keep these youngsters Hispanic, white, you know, black, brown, yellow, white, from getting involved in these gangs in their neighborhood? How do you keep that, especially in these poverty-ridden neighborhoods?
You're going to have to, like Shahid said, you got to make a choice, because there's three things that contribute, you know, to a person's growth. One is things that are hereditary, parenting, and the environment. If, you know, just because you see it happen, a lot of people fall into it. I got to be from here because I live here. Mm-hmm. No, I live here, but I don't have to do what you do.
That's right.
You know, so I can find something else to do. That's while right. You going down the street, that's like the youngster over here at this, what's that, we went to that day, that night, over here on Hill, when the youngster said his brother told him, don't be hanging out on the street. Matter of fact, go to Job Corps.
You know? Get him a job. Now, let me ask this. What do you think, how do the community feel about prisoners? People in prisons, you know, not just the hardcore ones that we got in the shoe and places like that. Do we think that there's any compassion from the community towards prisoners when we see so many people laying in the streets, like homeless people out down here and all like that?
Shahid, again, let me. I just have to touch on this because I think that. Those people are pigeonholed because they're stereotyped and they're labeled. And once you label somebody a dope head or alcoholic or paranoid schizophrenic, I mean, once you put that label on them, whether it's mentally or some physical observation, whether they're homosexual or a gangster, once you put the label on somebody, most people tend to form and conform to those labels. Rarely do people have the will or tend to challenge it. And I think that the answer, or one of the solutions, because there's probably many solutions to this problem, but it takes a village. It takes a village to raise a child. And I think that America has lost that concept. We've thrown it on a back burner. So it's like every man for themselves, you know, every person look out for themselves, you know, don't look out for the well-being of the next man. Because he doesn't look like you, or he doesn't drive the same car as you, you know, or he doesn't have the same goals as you. But if we go back to our ancestors, go back to our roots and put up those kindred spirits, we understand that we're connected and we're all one, and that it takes a village to raise a child. We have to all take a part and responsibility for what's going on in the prisons, because we're all responsible for it. No matter what, how big your house is or how much money you got in your account, you're responsible for the people that's getting locked up because you're turning a blind eye and you're not using your resources to do anything. We're all responsible, and we're all going to have to answer to ourselves at the end of the day.
Well, let me ask this real quick then, because I also want to look on the side of the people that get victimized by the people that end up in prison, especially the one that lose their life or lose family members and all like that. In relationship to a village, you know, how about concentrating on the job situation for so many? I mean, don't the village need to provide some jobs?
Right. For the we definitely have to put some resources back into our community.
Yeah.
But I think it starts with a foundation of, like Lee was saying, love. Because the village, back in those days, you know, with our ancestors, like, you know, it's like the concept of, like, hey, you know what? This person got in trouble in school, so before he got home to go see his mama and suffer the consequences, his the neighbor down the street, you know, she didn't discipline him. The dean and disciplined him. I mean, he went through all this level of discipline and affection and care and being convicted of what he did, you know? And I think that if we take that responsibility in our own hands and say, this, I am my brother's keeper, and I love the next man, I love the next woman standing next to me, I think that's where it starts. That's where the village comes in. And of course, if you have love in your heart, you'll share your resources, you'll share your money.
Okay, look, let's take about, we're winding down now. Let's take about 45 seconds, give us a closing comment and contact information. Let's start over here with you, Lee. Any quick closing comments about the solitary confinement thing?
No, I don't think there's anybody that want to go to prison. And I'm pretty sure they don't want to wind up in Pelican Bay. You know, it's not the life of a human being. God did not intend for us to be locked away in a little small box, you know, where the back door opens up and you go out to even a smaller place to exercise, you know, to have some clothes on your back, to be able to take care of yourself, to be able to communicate with people. Right? Mm-hmm. That's what God intended for us to have it back there.
Okay.
You know, and one thing left, the comment was, it was another comment. Jesus is the perfect example of the human being and what he should do, because he never fell prey to physical things. Never fell prey to them. That's why when he says, I shall not die, mm-hmm. you can lock me away, you can cut my throat. They did all that to Jesus, and you couldn't take his spirit away from him.
Yeah. You know? Okay.
Take us to church. Come on.
Lee. Well, you know, it's a world of its own where you can't escape once you're there. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to raise the idea of more justice, more equality, more just laws, and more just sentencing in our country, because there's a disproportionate portion of our population filling these prisons, and people get tired of hearing it, but that's the way it is in this country. Mm-hmm. And people need to pay attention to that fact. Some people go to jail for things that other people do mm-hmm. and get off, or at least get a much lighter sentences. That's okay. Not justice.
Okay. Bobby, take about 30 seconds.
Okay.
Shaheen got about 30 seconds.
Okay. Well, me and you on the same page. It's all really about people coming together and conversating about putting together some real actions to help make some things change. That's the whole thing. We got to communicate together, not texting this and that. Get into groups, sit down, discuss, make decisions, do some actions.
Okay.
Only love will conquer hate. That's the bottom line. We have to practice intentional acts of kindness, intentional acts of love, and be our brothers and sisters keepers and keep God first. I do want to get a plug in. Look for me, Shaheed Chappelle, June 5th on the reality show It Takes a Church on the Game Show Network. Okay. Love, peace and love.
Arlene.
Just want to invite you to come out tomorrow to the Vortex. We're going to have special speakers, people that families is in the shoe, and people that's been in the shoe for eons. They're going to have a chance to discuss these things tomorrow. Thanks.
Okay. And I just want to quickly mention about the comedy seduction drama, Miss Bonnie Band. That's Mrs. Lonnie. That's on June the 15th. At 5 o'clock at the Celebrity Center International, that's up in Hollywood, 5930 Franklin Avenue. More information, call 323-989-3848. And I would like to just mention that please join us next week when our special guest will be Bishop Angel Mason. And he will be discussing the topic, same-sex marriage and the black community. Now, I would like to extend a special thanks to Lee Beck, Lee Shaw, Shaheed Chappelle, my co-host Earlene Anthony, Bobby Buck sitting over there. 15 Minutes of Fame coming up in a couple of weeks. Please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report by Googling in Qumran Report. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report, and from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and on your family. I leave you with the song Bad Storm by Cheap Yellow Mustard.